We live in a society of immediacy. Everything must be available now. Everything we want must be available now, and we want everything. A major driver of this culture-wide impatience is technology. And what's happening to accelerate the already frantic and frenetic pace of life is not going away. The invention of the automatic spinner and the automatic loom freed women from the endless toil of spinning and weaving cloth. But that free time came at a cost. Planting, harvesting, and threshing machines freed men and women from back-breaking manual labor. They were freed from farm work so that they could go starve in the cities. All over the world, agricultural workers rebelled, destroyed equipment, and rioted because of these technological innovations that were supposed to make people's lives better. The canals, the trains, the horseless carriage, the aeroplane, all these inventions changed the shape and the pace of life. We used to have roads built around houses. We now build houses and towns and even entire cities to fit in with the roads. Nathaniel Hawthorne lamented the invention of the wood stove. Where would the fireside chats happen? They wouldn't. Without the hearth, there would be no hearthside talks. The tractor meant fewer men could farm more acres more efficiently, which drove down grain costs, which was good for people who like to eat bread. But soon, life would change. People needed to find new work. New work that meant not spending all day outside with living and growing things. Nature was no longer the constant companion, but just another commodity to be enjoyed at our pleasure. Work changed. Life changed. People changed. Families got smaller and houses got bigger. We got rich and we got bored. Decadence crept in. And to fill the time not spent working or raising a family, society found ways to entertain ourselves. For centuries, people would get together. They would sing in homes, churches, and pubs. Anytime people got together, they would celebrate. They would sing the harvest home. They would get together and play games, and there'd be music. Men, women, and children would take up the fiddle or the guitar or the banjo. They'd sit down at the piano. They'd play the drums, and they'd lift their voices together, or perhaps they'd just sing a cappella as they lived their lives. But the phonograph killed the opera house. The record player killed the phonograph, and video killed the radio star. Television changed our values, our beliefs, our accents, our preferences, and our desires. Oh, how TV shaped our desires. Television was one great big advertisement, and the message was get, possess, gain, own, grasp. More was the moral. Consumption was the creed, and it had to be now. And then came the internet. cell phone, the smartphone. And it seems the good old days may never return. The data are in. And I say this without the least fear of contradiction, that although the internet has advanced technology, and the other advanced technologies we see, they have come with many blessings, and they are real blessings. But for everything that the internet has provided, for everything that advanced technology has provided, and it has provided much, it has been a net negative to human society. The world would be better off without the internet, without smartphones, and without all these things that are distracting us to distraction. Brothers and sisters, all these changes that happened in our lives, everything that changed our life from the past centuries, all of these have had a cumulative effect of making us the most impatient bunch of people in human history. Our impatience, our boredom, our addiction to entertainment, and our antisocial attitudes, they are all of a piece. All of these problems, and they've always been problems, make no mistake, these are not new things that have entered into the human heart. They've always been problems, but they have become crises because we are not willing to wait or slow down. We live in dread terror of silence and cessation. We live as though we must never slow down. To slow is to die. Or worse, to live in the torture of boredom with the ever-lurking threat of self-examination and self-knowledge. Our impatience has caused us to live lives of self-indulgence, and this is, in turn, has led us to live lives full of noise and distraction. We need the noise. Gotta have the podcast. We need to see the pretty colors move on the screen. We need it always and incessantly and without fail. And we need it more and more and more and more and more. We never need it less. We always need it more. We need it louder, never quieter. And life must never slow down. Must never slow down because we all know, we know. We know what we will hear if we get rid of the noise and slow down. We will hear the voice of God. It is no accident that Moses went to a mountain. It is no accident that Elijah went to a mountain, that John went to the desert, that Jesus went to the desert, that Paul went to the desert. It is no accident that God spoke to Jacob in the wilderness. That David, the songwriter, psalmist, and shepherd, was out there alone tending the flock. It's no accident that Amos kept an orchard. The quiet and calm of outdoor work and isolation was how God spoke to many of his saints in the past. And for all of human history, until very recently, the silence and isolation that they experienced was common for people. Time alone and time without distractions was admittedly often hard to come by. Susanna Wesley, that great woman of God, the story is that when she just couldn't get away from the kids, she would have to take her own apron and pull her apron up over her head and pray. That was her prayer closet. That was the only time she could get away from her kids, was to just pull her apron over her head. Mothers, from Eve on down, will lament the lack of time to themselves, which, by the way, is a reminder to husbands to give their wives time to themselves, but that's another sermon for another day. But in the past, when mother was alone, it was quiet, or at least the screaming was in another room. Mother could go for a walk, or pray, or just sit and be alone with her thoughts. Men in the field, or in the forest, or at the forge, could work with their manly muscles while their minds meditated on mightier matters. It is no accident that people who embraced the silence and solitude, who learned to be still, have been the great statesmen and politicians, saints and poets. Augustine was saved in a silent garden. Well, it was silent until he heard, "Polelege, polelege, polelege." Take it up and read. And he saw the scriptures and he took it up and he read. Luther rediscovered justification by faith in the silent tedium of translation. Menno Simon's soul was set on fire as he contemplated his own brother's death. C.S. Lewis wrote every single one of his books by hand with a dip pen. I'm sure you've heard it, and it's true. Patience is a virtue. Indeed, patience is the queen of virtues. Alexandre Dumas, he wrote of God, "He is patient, for he is eternal." God is patient. God knows how to wait. God came in the flesh. And he waited. He waited. He was born, and he was placed in a manger, and he waited. Raised among peasant boys and girls, he waited. Working in the carpentry shop, he waited. He waited for the right time to do and to teach. He waited for the right time to reveal his power. He waited for the right time to reveal his divinity. Jesus Christ waited. He waited while his disciples bickered about who was the greatest. He waited among the shrieks of demons and the groans of the dying. He waited while Martha and Mary poured out their souls to him, asking why he waited. And he waited. He waited before Annas. And he waited before Caiaphas. And he waited before Herod. And he waited before Pilate. And he waited while they beat him. And he waited while they spit on him. And he waited while they stripped him and scourged him. He waited while they condemned him. He waited while they rejected him. He waited while they chose a murderer instead of him. He waited while they chose Caesar instead of him. He waited while they made him carry the cross. He waited while they insulted him and ripped the hair from his body. He waited when they nailed him to the tree. He waited while they blasphemed him. He waited while they speared him. He waited when they anointed him and buried him. Jesus waited. And Jesus is waiting. Still. He is still waiting. He is waiting for his people to receive him so that the times of refreshing may come. He is waiting for the right time to return. He is waiting for the right time to come in power and glory. He is coming for the right time to judge the living and the dead. He is waiting, and he can wait, and he can be patient because he is eternal, and because he knows all things, and because he knows the end from the beginning. Jesus Christ waits. Jesus Christ is patient. He is patient because he is eternal, and Christ calls us to be patient too. He calls us to wait. He calls us to slow down, to cease, and be silent. He calls us to be like him. Now, we are not eternal. We do not know the end from the beginning. We do not have all power. But the eternal, omniscient, omnipotent one dwells within us. And the one who tells us to be patient is the one who knows the end from the beginning. Now, just take a pause. Maybe as you hear me preaching, maybe as you hear these, at least to me, convicting words about patience, you might either be coming up with excuses or excited because you want to know what I'm proposing. What, Luke, are you saying? How then shall we live? And even if you don't care about what I propose about being patient, I ask you to just be patient and wait, and the sermon will be over shortly. What am I proposing, brothers and sisters? I am proposing that we become patient people, people who know and love and live out the virtue of patience. How are we going to do it? By being patient. Take small steps. Seek little things, small changes to life where we can build patience, because patience is not an all or nothing. Patience is a muscle that must be grown and strengthened. Like all the virtues, it is a skill that must be developed. It is a discipline that must be lived out. It is not an all or nothing. You are not either a patient person or you're an impatient person. Most people are patient until they're not, right? We need to change the when we're not. We need to extend our patience to become more like Christ. We must be patient so that we may become patient. And here's what I propose. This is my proposal. Find the biggest time waster you have in your life. And if you don't know what it is, ask your spouse or your best friend, and I'm sure they will tell you without hesitation what the biggest time waster in your life is. And replace 15 minutes of it a day. That's all I'm calling you to do as your pastor. Take the biggest time waster you have and just replace 15 minutes of that a day and dedicate that to one of three things: prayer, silence, or walking. You can sit in silence. You can lay on the couch in silence. The problem is with my silent meditation is it often turns into unconscious meditation, so maybe walking may be a better way to go. But this is my proposal. We don't want to swing for the fences here. We want simple, achievable goals. We need to be patient in becoming patient. 15 minutes a day, prayer, silence, or walking. You could combine all three. Silent prayer while you walk. I don't know. It's your 15 minutes. And as you develop these skills of patience, try to simplify life. Try to eliminate the distractions, eliminate the noise. Get rid of the need for constant entertainment, for constant neural firing, for constant stimulation. Go for longer walks as time goes by. 3, 6 months, a year from now, after you've done your 15 minutes a day, try to extend it a little bit. Pray more. Read the Bible more. Read poetry. Have long talks with your friends and family. Call your mom. I bet she'll pick up the phone. Have lunch with your pastor. Especially if you pay. I don't know, you know. Brothers and sisters, the list could go on forever. There are a million ways to grow in patience. That's not the point. And the point is not to try to do it all at once. The point is that little by little, day by day, we want to be a little bit more like Jesus Christ, because patience is the key to becoming patient. We will become patient in becoming patient. I promise you that this will be hard. I absolutely promise you that this will be difficult. If you set out today, if you are inspired today and you say, Luke, you're right, I've got too many distractions in my life. I need to get rid of some of these distractions. I need to develop the skill of patience, and I need to just simplify my life, get rid of the noise, and I want to go for it. I promise you, if you set your heart on becoming patient, Satan will do anything to oppose you. He will do anything to keep a person from becoming patient and prayerful. Satan will oppose you. Your own flesh will oppose you, because your flesh, your heart, it wants the entertainment, it wants the stimulation, it wants the noise. There's going to be opposition. There will be boredom. There will be boredom. I promise you, there will be boredom. And you'll have temptation. Oh, you'll get the jitters and you'll get the Joneses, and you'll be trying to pray, and you'll see the smartphone that you very thoughtfully put out of your own reach, and you're going to try. You haven't tried it since you were 11 years old, but you're going to see if you have the force. Come to me. Come to me, smartphone. And then you'll get up, and then you'll pick it up because you don't have the force. There will be temptation. You'll jitter and you'll jones for it. You'll want the noise and distraction. Be patient. Don't give in. Day by day by day, little by little, let us develop the discipline. Let us build up the virtue of patience. The only way to be patient is to be patient. But if you do it, you've done it. So there's that. Brothers and sisters, be like Christ. Fix your gaze on the eternal. Be patient. Amen.